It's time for the network break. Sit back, grab a coffee, and join us for an analysis of the latest IT news, vendor moves, and new product announcements. We'll separate the signal from the noise, or at least make some noise of our own. Welcome to episode 24. I'm Drew Conry Murray, and with me as always is Greg Farrow. Greg, how you doing?
Aren't you glad it's the end of the year and theoretically there's going to be a change freeze and ITIL 3.0 says that you're not allowed to do any work during the holidays?
Good news for you.
Well, that's, you know, of course, you know, in an ITIL compliant world and an enterprise network and most service provider networks, we don't do any changes over Christmas, usually from around about the 8th or the 10th of December until around the 8th or 10th of January. Mm-hmm. So we lose, you know, almost 1/12 of the whole year of functional operations to just doing nothing. It's awful. It's awesome. All because some very expensive consultant said this is a great idea.
Now, I wonder, do you have a sense of how pervasive that is? Because the big kickoff in the U.S. is more around the Thanksgiving break in terms of, you know, all of the commerce and
absolutely.
Stuff going on. So I wonder if the freeze happens earlier over here or
no, absolutely universal. There's a freeze during Thanksgiving, but only for the 3 days. For that weekend that it happens. Uh-huh. But from Christmas, sometime around about the first or second week, companies who are doing ITIL say that there's too much risk that you'll make a change and you won't be able to access tech support in the back end. So if you're making a change in a system and you ring up support and say, I'd like to talk to Joe Schmo to get tech support, he might be on holidays.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's kind of like, you know, back to the 1970s when there was only one Joe Schmo. I mean, you know, these companies are 24/7. You know, Cisco doesn't stop just because it's Christmas.
Right.
But, you know, we still arcane, stupid ideas.
Well, I know that you hate ITIL with every fiber of your being, but it does seem like, you know, if you're running in a known good state, this is your busiest time. Do you
it's
necessarily
not busy, though. If you're a bank, it's your slowest time.
I guess it depends on, what industry you're talking.
Yes, very much so. So it varies a lot depending on all sorts of things, right? But 60 to 70% of businesses. So if you're retail, fine. If you're a online web presence, something like that, got to knock yourself out. But 60 to 70% of business. If you're a manufacturing business, your busiest time was back in August.
Right.
Yeah, they don't have a change freeze during that time.
Right.
Well, they might do, but rarely, but generally they don't. And they, but it's all founded in the idea that at Christmas time, all of the key people are not available to do tech support, which
right.
is a 20-year-old idea.
That's true.
And, you know, ITIL, living 30 years in the past, is still pretty much where we're at. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it does make sense to, you know, evaluate change on a case-by-case basis and say, you know, making – let's not replace the database on the day before Christmas.
Yes.
You know – yes. A little common sense, but freezing it 2 or 3 weeks out seems...
It does seem excessive.
Yes. And lacks a certain maturity, you know.
Well, sure.
Hmm. And if your whole IT system is so fragile that making change breaks it, maybe you've got a problem with your IT.
That is a good point.
No wonder we put it in the bloomin' cloud. Not that that makes it any more reliable, by the way, but
well,
it just
you
means
have you... someone you can yell at. That's
yeah, it's somebody else's fault. You can blame them.
Yeah.
Not that they ever get into trouble for it. So before we get too much further in, we should just say that today's podcast is brought to you by SolarWinds. SolarWinds is a leading provider of IT management software. What you do with SolarWinds is you install it into your network and it's able to monitor all of your networking equipment using a range of various tools. There's many products in the SolarWinds portfolio and, in fact, it's an ever-growing capability. But in particular, you should go and check out the new Network Performance Monitor version 11, which now does deep packet analysis. You can go and visit www.solarwinds.com/npm to learn more. And I've personally been using SolarWinds on and off for many years. For most mid-sized networks, it's a great tool. It can get you going very, very fast to get started. You can often make it useful over the time. So do go over to solarwinds.com, and then you do make sure you tell them where the appropriate fields that packet pushes sent you.
All right. So we've been off for a couple of weeks. You were traveling and doing such things, but we've had some interesting news in the time. Probably the biggest is Cisco and Arista. Cisco taking Arista to court over some patent infringements.
Yeah. So Cisco hasn't historically done much about suing its competitors.
Right.
And you got to wonder why now.
That's a question that jumped into my mind too. Why now?
Why now? So is Arista achieving real market penetration to actually worry Cisco about its growth? So therefore, you know, they've failed to compete with them directly. And, you know, so now they need to do a little more to, you know, I can't beat them in the normal way, like send more salespeople out, give deeper discounts, you know, beat my chest and say I'm Cisco. That hasn't seemed to work. Uh-huh. They also haven't been able to buy Arista, which is what the Cisco's done with a lot of its competitors, what Cisco does with a lot of competitors, or they cut off their sources. So, you know, Cisco's often done things like get into the market and buy up capacity so that these competitors can't get too much of a, you know, limit silicon capacity or, you know, steal engineers or something like that from competitors so that they lose momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't been successful here.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. The blog that Cisco posted about this doesn't talk about timing when they detected these things, how long they think it's been going on. But it's also just interesting that, you know, now that Arista is a public company, they bring this forward.
I think there's a few things. One is Cisco's an Arista public company. I think Cisco has finally realized that Arista is a genuine threat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, up until now, Cisco's been doing quite well in some niche markets. But I've heard stories of major banking customers defecting wholesale and, you know, Uncle John flying in to try and rescue them. Uh-huh. Type stuff. And so maybe it's time to do some stuff. Now, couple of things here is, one is the door of staff leaving Cisco, really top flight staff going to Arista, may be an issue here. So they do specifically call out here that, you know, Arista incorporates proprietaries that Cisco staff, in that there's a section down here, promotion of theft. Particularly troubling is that Arista promotes the theft of intellectual property, considers their executives' prior work with Cisco and the ability to copy intellectual property to be a key selling point for their products. So what they're saying there is, A, you're hiring my engineers, and they're using their knowledge from Cisco to make Arista's products somewhat like Cisco. So one of the selling points around Arista is that its CLI and its usage is very similar to Cisco's, almost word-for-word compatible.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure Arista Cisco wants to see Arista stop that. So that is a key advantage for Arista, in that, you know, if you're used to running Cisco iOS, you can use, not that it, I mean, personally, I think it's a silly thing because Cisco's iOS command line is deeply incompatible even amongst itself. There's very little consistency amongst the versions of operating system that it has.
Uh-huh.
So it's less clear to me that that's actually real.
Right.
So I think there's a staffing problem. A lot of staff are leaving Cisco because Cisco's financially not doing very well. The share price is not doing very well. So if you're getting stock options at Cisco, you're probably looking at them going, well, that was pretty pointless. You know, the share price hasn't gone up in 10 years.
Right.
If you're looking at share price as a bonus, or you're getting shares as a dividend, or, you know, a payout, you'd be going, not so great. Maybe I could go to Arista and look at them. They got a $3 billion, you know, valuation. If you were getting shares over there, you'd be doing pretty well.
Right.
Mm. And it's a threat. And I suspect that it's much more. I think that we're going to see a lot more of this because HP and Dell and Extreme all have Cisco command lines.
Uh-huh.
And even Avaya now has a command line which looks a lot like Cisco iOS, at least in principle. It is subtly different in many ways. So if Cisco chases this down, it's going to be a real issue.
Maybe they're experimenting with Arista and see how it plays out, and if they get a victory, they can turn to others.
I think they're sort of doing the big fat smelly fat lady thing that I talked about. You know,
I don't know.
Well, so Microsoft is the big smelly fat lady. When it says I'm going to go and do a network, I'm going to do a diagramming tool or a graphical tool like Visio,
uh-huh.
and then it takes 3 years to ship the product. Uh-huh. But as soon as a smelly fat lady sits in the seat, nobody sits next to her. Do you know what I mean?
I got it.
You got it. Nobody wants to sit around that person because of the smell. you just can't. And even if the smelly fat lady isn't, you know, perfectly nice and not a, you know, blah blah blah, and maybe it never comes. Maybe it, you know, but that's Cisco might be just sort of saying, you know, chasing everybody away and saying we're going to start to defend our turf. So I don't see any way that Cisco, you know, the only way you can read it is that Cisco's under threat. It's feeling the pinch as competitors steal market share and revenue. Uh-huh. Cisco's concerned about staff leaving. Oh, and the other thing too is they talk about the SysDB.
Yeah.
As a big threat. Did you remember about 6 months ago there was an article floating around the press talking about there was one of the founders of Arista, David Cheriton, was actually suing Arista for ownership of the SysDB something something.
Oh, yes. I do remember that.
Uh-huh. And, I mean, I looked up what SysDB is, and it's actually like an obvious concept. Like, to me, it looks like, duh. You don't use inter-process communication if you were designing a new operating system from the ground up. You'd create a central database. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look proprietary to me.
Well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't really care. But,
but it makes a lot of interesting news.
Well, I think increasingly things like the CLI don't matter as SDN, you know, ultimately will make the CLI less relevant. And that whole idea of copying, so that's a non, you know, there'll still be a court case, no doubt, and it'll all go down to whatever it does. But yeah. For customers, the CLI matters less going forward as we have the graphic, the SDN consoles taking it over. Mm-hmm. And I think also we're starting to see the rise of white box, which means, you know, as markets shrink, so, you know, the total switching market isn't growing particularly, even though IDC came up and said certain segments of the switching market, but I think overall switching set to shrink dramatically in the years ahead, and you're going to see more of this, I need to sustain revenues to keep shareholders happy, and I'm going to do silly things.
So we'll keep an eye on the Cisco story, but looking at some other news, GCHQ's jihad on tech firms can only fail. GCHQ, that's Britain's intelligence service?
Yeah, so that's the UK version of the NSA. Uh-huh. There's a technology group, and they fundamentally have had a very comprehensive monitoring scheme. And what they've been saying is recently there was some unhappiness where a couple of people got onto Facebook and started to say, you know, unhappy things about terrorism or whatever it was, something or another. And the government's gone, oh, it's up to the tech firms to give us all the data so that we can decide you're not helping us enough. And GCHQ says, yeah, yeah, we want all the information that's in Google and Facebook and blah, blah, Yahoo and all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And blaming, and they're saying, well, we didn't detect that this was a criminal offence, was about, you know, it was something truly awful, I don't want to talk about it, but they're saying until these tech firms, you know, start to cooperate, it's going to be their fault, which is a bit, you know, what?
Yeah. So they're essentially saying if someone is talking about committing a crime on Facebook, it's up to Facebook to be feeding us their data so we can see it and then we can do something about it. And if Facebook doesn't, then it's Facebook's fault. Is that the idea?
Yes, pretty much.
Okay.
And now it's all the tech firm's fault because they're not helping us enough.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, who wants to actually help the GCHQ with data, right? Customers are saying to Facebook and Google, stop. You know, people are already unhappy about being monitored. If they start handing it off to the government, it starts to look like North Korea.
It sure does.
Feels like
yeah.
it.
Yeah. We had a similar story a few weeks ago in the U.S. about the FBI saying, you know, encryption makes our job harder. We need to do something about this. And it caused kind of a similar backlash with people saying, well, wait a second.
Sure.
You know, what about my banking transactions? What about privacy?
Which is related, and I'll add a link in here. The Internet Architecture Board, I'll put this in the show notes, has now mandated that all protocols in the Internet should be encrypted by default. Mm-hmm. Which is a guideline. People don't have to actually go and do that, but we're expecting them to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Long overdue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The only reason we didn't encrypt protocols back in the old days, when I say old days, mean, but you know what I mean. Like, we didn't do it before, was because the processing load of doing encryption and managing certificates and, you know, the whole process of delivering encryption was expensive in terms of CPU time and memory.
Yes.
And the complexity of getting certificates to make the encryption to keep it secure. Well, There has been new projects coming out. There's one by the EFF in partnership with Cisco and a couple of others, where you can now get free certificates for your web domain. That'll come mainstream. So everybody can have SSL encryption. Google's already said to us that it will positively rank encrypted websites.
Yes.
So you've got an incentive to do that. And the IAB is saying all future protocols should be encrypted. So it's part of a move to say, so if anyone, not just legally empowered government entities, anybody wants to tap on the network, they will have to work a lot harder to get taps. It just raises the bar on security to a certain level.
Yeah, it does raise the bar slightly. I think in the United States we've there's often an outcry, if a terrorist attack or something bad happens, where people say, why couldn't you stop it? Why couldn't you predict this? Why did this terrible thing have to happen? Without thinking at the other end what the implementation or the implication of that actually is, that, if you want people to know everything is going to happen in advance, that means persistent surveillance and monitoring. And do you really want to live in a society like that?
Yes. So we're, and, where does it stop?
Exactly.
And it's, in a society where you're constantly surveilled, if you have a, if you suddenly turn up to the doctor and they find that you have some sort of condition, does your employer get notified that you're now effectively ill and they can cease your employment?
Sure. Or if you say something that, the police don't happen not to like, and they decide to knock on your door and...
Well, particularly in America, where the police have untrammeled powers.
Yes, as we've seen.
Yes. I can kill somebody and get away with it, even though it seemed, on the outside. I mean, that Ferguson thing where the cop got off for shooting that person and the coroner stood up and said, no, I didn't take any photos of the body. The battery was flat in my camera. Uh-huh. Still fairly stunning.
Yes.
That, on the face of it, that seems like, I was going to do coronary work today, but, got a bit bored.
Yeah.
Couldn't be bothered.
Couldn't find a new battery. Well, I think that's, I think after 9/11 here, a lot of people in the country freaked out and decided that protection was more important than liberty. And now we're starting to see the consequences of what that means. And so hopefully we're starting to swing the pendulum back a little bit people like the organizations like the FBI say, hey, let's get rid of encryption so that we can see what you're doing all the time.
I mean, it must be great
because
for them.
Because bad guys, because terrorism.
Because pedophiles, because pornographers, because, drugs.
Right.
Things that existed before and will exist even after encryption, quite frankly.
Yes.
So.
All right.
Juniper's had a bad week.
How so?
It whipped off a bunch of its security products, so it... Juniper's had quite a comprehensive security portfolio that's been quite attractive.
Yes.
But obviously it hasn't actually sold as much as people think. It has three products which it appears to have dropped into the bin: Firefly, Host, Web App Secure, and DDoS Secure. These are security products done at the application layer that are very narrowly focused on a specific market segment. They were very good. I've seen them and seen demos and stuff like that. They were quite powerful. But maybe they haven't done as well as people would like.
Yeah, Ethan Banks, actually, your friend and colleague, wrote an interesting blog about this from the user perspective, because he uses a couple of these products. And for one, he's not sure this might be just a rumor. He doesn't know if this is actually happening because he hasn't heard anything from Juniper, but a little bit of dismay if it is. And I thought it was interesting too, because I know that Juniper has made a really significant effort to get into the security market, over the past 5 to 10 years with some significant acquisitions. So to see them moving away, it was a head scratcher for me as well.
I think that Juniper's having a bit of a struggle because it had those CEO problems a couple of weeks back. And there's an activist investor who wants to squeeze some cash out of the business. So one way that Juniper can be seen to be doing something, even if it's cutting off your nose to spite your face, it might be to ditch a few products and then go, hey, look, we did something.
Oh, those activist investors.
Yeah. I think it's, the other thing that Juniper did this week is that they offered a new switch.
Yes, a white box
which
switch.
Not only is it white box, it's open compute. Have you looked closely at it?
Just a little bit, yes. I guess I wouldn't say closely.
Okay, so it's a Juniper. It's actually an open compute switch. So yes, not only is it white box, but it's white box. Cisco, Juniper in some ways has already got a white box switch in the QFX 5500. which uses the Broadcom Trident 2, and it goes in and then it runs Junos, but it's a full switching implementation. The Juniper OCX 1100, as it's known, is a full-on open compute standard. So that is, it uses the open compute hardware standard. It's got the Juniper label on top, but it runs the Junos operating system. So not just white box, open compute.
Right. Although with this story, I wasn't clear that it, whether you still have to pay for a Junos license even if you're going to install something else.
Oh, yes.
Else.
No, definitely. Oh, no, definitely. It's like Microsoft at this point.
But doesn't that sort of defeat the point of a white box, though?
Well, the point is that it's so I sort of thought I agree with you. It does defeat the point. But here's where I think the magic comes in, is there's three markets. There's now three markets in the industry today. Networking has always been two markets, enterprise and service provider. Right. And we can forget retail or consumer or whatever. There's really always, you know, we can lug all that under enterprise, and then there's service provider. In reality, there's three markets now. Cloud providers is the third. Mm-hmm. So there's an awful lot of mid-sized, mid-tier service providers. Now, if I think carefully about who Juniper's biggest customers are or where they want to be, they're sort of moving back to the service provider or putting a renewed focus on the service provider. They need a switch that's going to go into those carriers. Mm-hmm. And what is it that the carriers want?
Flexibility, openness, and low cost.
That's correct. So this switch appears to be right into that ballpark.
You get the flexibility and the openness, but if I'm paying for a license that I'm not going to use, and I'm buying, you know, a crate load,
you still need the Junos license.
But that just makes me think it's taking one step forward but two steps back, because if I'm really looking at white box, if I'm looking at Juniper as a, you know, to buy, I'll just buy Juniper. Why do I need this white box thing if I still have to pay for the license anyway?
So why do people buy Microsoft Windows Server 2012 instead of Red Hat Linux?
Because they like it. They've got people who know how to use it and so on.
Yeah, so that's where Junos on Open Compute comes from. Now, I think there's also a tie-up with Contrail. And so if you think there's carriers are out there looking to build these mega cloud data center things in their existing facilities, and they're looking, you know, Contrail, because Contrail is a little different to most other solutions, it's not as interoperable with white box switches.
Right.
So now you can get it, but, and customers also, so many customers want their vertical stack.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to be able to say, you sell me the network switch, you take responsibility, give me a professional services deal to give me the Contrail deployment. And I think this is now the low cost hardware. It's got a bunch of features missing, right? So I'm absolutely just trying to find a blog post that was done by Doug Hanks. I'll get there eventually. But this switch is like no MPLS, no MLAG, no, you know, a lot of the features are de-featured because it's built for this cloud provider market.
So you still may get a deal on the price even though you're paying for a license that you may or may not use.
Yeah, so, you know, Windows NT, Windows 95. Mm-hmm. It's cheaper because it has less stuff in it.
Are you hearing a lot about Contrail being picked up in the service provider market? And Contrail is the NFV sort of overlay, Juniper's SDN NFV play.
I don't think any of the SDN solutions at the carrier level are being picked up in significant volumes at this point in time. There's a lot of evaluation. There's a lot of things. I think for carriers, they really want to see the NFV part. So the SDN part is just like, here's how I connect networks together. I've got a new way of connecting network, you know. And there's a seal going, But I think the real value is going to come in when NFV, where we can replace, you know, Nokia or, you know, the 4G appliance stack with software. Mm-hmm. And then I start running, and then I need proxy servers and load balancer. I've replaced all those with VMs. And I think if I was carriers, then I'd be waiting for that.
Okay.
I could change my mind next week when I learn something new.
Of course, you have that privilege.
After all, we're just making something up.
As a pundit, I can pivot 180 degrees.
Yeah. As more information comes to light. So I think that NFV is really the big thing for carriers, and that's what they're focusing on, you know, things like service catalogs and provisioning.
Yes.
And the actual SDN piece underneath is critical. It's important, but until we see the NFV values, I don't think the SDN sales will happen.
Okay. We had mentioned cloud earlier in talking about Juniper. Kurt Marco, who's a friend of mine, wrote a really nice piece in Forbes about more pain ahead for HP and other big IT vendors. This is something you've been talking about for a long time. He's looked at enterprise cloud use and how it's set to skyrocket. The money quote here is that the cloud is eating through the profits of big established IT hardware and software vendors like a biblical swarm of locusts. So essentially, the idea is that, you know, if I'm putting more services into the cloud, whether it's software as a service or infrastructure or PaaS or whatever, I'm not buying as many servers, as many switches, and so on, and that's bad news for the incumbents.
It's like I've been saying this for how long? Gee whiz. You know, when we talked about how many switch sales are going to happen, I said the total value of the market will shrink. Because today we use 1,001 gig ports, but tomorrow we'll just use 110 gigs. All right, and the price of 10 gig ports is approaching the price of 1 gig ports. That's not the same business, right? And then, as even worse, is there's a cumulative change, because you have less switches, you actually have less switches connecting the switches. So the market actually shrinks exponentially. In the case of servers, you know, when you can install 20, 30, 40, 50 VMs on a single physical server, even if the server's five times bigger, it's still got replacing 50 physical servers. So, yes.
Yes.
You know.
Well, Kurt's article does a nice job of laying it out, so it's worth a read.
And private cloud is going to be slow, mainly because there's lots of reasons why private cloud adoption will be slow, as will public cloud adoption. You know, we talked earlier about how Amazon and all those types. I mean, that might be a $20 billion market that's growing at 50% per year, but existing enterprise IT is a multi-trillion dollar market. And so even if public cloud can continue to grow, then in 20 years it might approach some significant size, 10 to 20 years. But in the meantime, relatively small. Most IT teams only have about 10% of their total capacity dedicated to doing new stuff.
Right.
So building a private cloud with 10% of resources or less is a long, slow process.
Yeah. Mm.
There's a quote somewhere that says it happens faster than you think but slower than you'd like. So, I can't remember the relationship. Something like that.
All right. And last but not least, back to Cisco. They recently announced they're offering an analytics service.
And I'm gonna get up some journalists here, but a little bit. But Cisco's making an analytics push. So fundamentally, what they're saying is we are producing a new range of products called Connected Analytics. It's got the Internet of Everything attached to it because deeply unimaginative marketing is a Cisco specialty. Don't tell me I'm wrong. And what they're basically doing is they're taking existing analytics measure points, so NetFlow data or data in the networking devices, and then exporting it into the cloud that Cisco has. And then they're going to run it through a big data system to give you deep analytics on your system. This is significantly different from the way we do things today, because most of the network tools, network monitoring or network management tools we have today, are simple read-only. So you'll have a Cisco Prime system that reads, you know, performance data from the data center switches, or what monitors the WAN routers for performance, or monitors the campus switches. But they're not all integrated together. They don't actually correlate all of the data points in your network to say, oh, there's a problem with call quality on the call center. Oh, it's related to the fact that the MPLS circuit in Inner Mongolia is actually no longer performing that thing. That normally requires a person to troubleshoot, trace, you know, so forth. So this connected analytics is a push into saying we could use big data concepts to perform deeper analysis on the available data.
Yes.
And they're offering it as a service offer, you know, as a service.
Yeah, it looks like they've broken it down into a variety of packages for things like retail, for contact centers, and around mobility and Wi-Fi.
Yeah, so they take the data off those devices, pump it in. No doubt it allows them to make a license on every single element of it. So that, you know, make it easy to start. You just turn it on for wireless and then you get suckered into the whole thing, which is fine. You know, that's one way. It's a perfectly valid business model. There was a really interesting thing on New York Times which said Cisco's moving into the big data market. that's just about as much as Cisco's as much moving into the big data market as I'm moving into Google's market by having a blog. There's big data as the product, as a, you know, as a technology, yes. And there's a product that you build from it, and the two are not at all related.
Right.
You know, so if you want to go and look at Hadoop or Tableau or one of these other big data companies that are out there, they're just providing data back ends. Cisco's actually building a service out of a big data system in the back end. Who cares? That it, you know, it probably is big data because guess what? There's an awful lot of data to be captured.
I mean, what isn't big data these days anyway? It's sort of a meaningless term now.
And well, you've got to be careful here. It's a bit like SDN exists both as a platform and a product. You know, there's the SDN products that do a specific thing, and then there's other companies who are building platforms so that everybody comes and brings their stuff to it. And like HP's VAN is a platform, and they have a bunch of partners who bring, you know, like Sisei and F5 and, you know, those types of guys who can, you can go to the App Store and buy a license and it suddenly runs on VAN. Those are platforms, not products. And big data, there is a product, Hadoop, you know, from those companies like, you know, who are all in it. And then there's what you can you do with it that as a service piece of these big data tools. So good for Cisco. Only my I'm a bit dubious. Cisco has a long-established history of giving these things a bit of a go and then Googling them when they don't do so well.
Googling them?
Yeah, throw them away, shut them down.
I've not heard Googling used in that regard.
Well, that's how I mean, I've used so many things from Google over the years, services in RSS, Feed,
yes, okay.
Wave, right? All those tools, and then they get Googled, right? I can't be bothered anymore. You know, all those things that Cisco's done over the years that, you know, we're bored with that now. We'll just get rid of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true, but just talking about what we're talking about earlier in terms of the if the switch and router market is really shrinking, they need to open up new lines of business. This data analytics service seems like certainly something that may have potential and may not be Googled two or three.
I agree. However, Cisco's history with software is extremely patchy. Which one of Cisco's software products can you name today that is an outstanding success?
VPN software?
Still an appliance.
I guess so.
So, you know, out of all this, you know, Ironport, what about Ironport, their web proxy service, or ScanSafe, their email scanning service? Not exactly market leading or gaining, you know, not necessarily perceived as number one or number two in the market.
Well, they were also acquisitions, though.
Still. So, you know, I'm sure this is an acquisition as well. I haven't bothered to look into the back end. I doubt Cisco developed it themselves. But, you know, all those products that Cisco's done over the years and gone, bored with it, throw it away. So I'm not going to rush into this. I'm going to wait to see if there's some other fools out there who think it's a good idea.
Okay. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of another exciting episode. Where can folks find you for the rest of the week, Greg?
Building up excitement for exciting episodes, I think. Exciting episode. You can find me on my blog at Ethereal Mind, being exciting. And I'm also on Twitter doing exciting things, like exciting. And also in other fine social media outlets, you can find my ouvoir almost everywhere.
Right on.
And before I go, I should mention we were at Ethan and I attended HP Discover, and we've recorded a whole bunch of content around HP's strategies and technologies. You kind of forget that HP is a networking company, a big one. They have one of everything. And we start to dig into some of those technologies, the wireless, the campus, and all that sort of stuff. Not just the cool new stuff. We look at the real stuff that you're probably using today. So get on over to the Priority Queue feed, which is a separate channel in the network. You might just be listening to Network Break channel alone. Go over to Priority Queue feed and subscribe to that one. And you'll be able to hear a bunch of really interesting stuff about HP while you're in the car driving along. And, of course, thanks to SolarWinds for sponsoring the show today.
Thanks, Greg. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.